Thank you, Whitney. Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. David Chan. Dr. Chan is an associate professor of health policy at the Stanford School of Medicine. He's also an investigator at the Department of Veterans Affairs at the Health Economic Resource Center. He's also a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Dr. Chan's research focuses on provider behavior and measures the causal impact of care inside and outside the VA. And today's presentation is going to show you a remarkable way of how he's done that. A little bit of history about Dr. Chan. He's very prestigious in the sense that he's won many awards. He's recognized internationally. In 2014, he received the NIH Director's High Risk, High Reward Early Independence Award to study the optimal balance of information and health information technology for patient care. Recently in 2023, he received the American Society of Health Economists Medal, awarded to early career economists with the most significant contributions to health economics. And just even more recently, Dr. Chan received the 2024 National Institute of Healthcare Management Research Award on the actual presentation he will be presenting today. So with that, I'd like to turn things over to Dr. Chan.
Thank you, Mark. It's my pleasure to be here and talk about this research again. I think it's, I'm glad to see that it's received some recent awards, and I think it's good to share this research with the VA community. So this research is about outcomes and spending in the VA system versus non-VA hospitals. And let's see if I can move this down. And I just wanted to start off this, you know, this, I think this question has relevance to a number of audiences. And I would just like to start with my first poll question. How would you primarily describe yourself? Number one, a clinician. Number two, a researcher. Number three, policymaker, manager, or administrator. Number four, veteran. And number five, other, or maybe some combination of the above, if you don't think that one of the above is like your primary role at the VA.
Thank you, Dr. Chan. So the poll is open and running, and the poll should have populated on the right-hand side of your WebEx window. Attendees, once you've selected your answer choices, please remember to click submit for those answer choices to get recorded. I see that things have slowed down quite a bit, so I'll just let the poll run for just 5 more seconds before closing it out. All right, just close out that poll. And the results are, we have 5% said A, clinician, 43% said B, researcher, 11% said C, policymaker, manager or administrator, 5% said D, veteran, and then 10% said E, other, but I'm not seeing any comments made into the Q&A, so thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Yes, so it's great to see a mix of audiences, and I think it's very appropriate. The majority of people here are researchers, but not the vast majority. So just moving along. I want to start, you know, with the motivation for this question. I think it's probably pretty well motivated to everybody on this call. The VA, the Veterans Health Administration, is the nation's largest healthcare delivery system. There has been substantial growth in federal spending on the VA, but there have also been some legislative proposals to, I use the word privatize loosely, but you know, the basic idea is that allowing veterans to use providers outside of the VA. And we have this in the Choice Act in 2014 and the Mission Act spanning both the Obama and Trump administrations. There has certainly been a lot of literature looking at the performance of the VA. In the medical literature, we've had hundreds of process measures reviewed in some meta-analyses in which the VA is generally better. There is, however, mixed outcomes when you look at measures such as mortality or health outcomes as opposed to process measures. And one of the difficulties in this literature is that they usually compare, the majority of papers in this literature compare veterans in the VA with non-veterans using non-VA hospitals. So the there's a primary difference in terms of patient population. And the question we want to ask here is, what is the causal effect of receiving VA versus non-VA care on health outcomes and spending? We're going to be focusing on a patient population of veterans that are eligible both for VA care as well as non-VA care through Medicare. And I will be describing for the rest of this presentation the approach that we use in which we can interpret this as a causal effect. So as I said, the population that we're focusing on is veterans above age 65 who may either use the VA or non-VA care paid for by Medicare since they're above age 65. We're focusing on a setting of emergency department care, and we're looking at veterans that are transported to the emergency department or ED by ambulance. So this is a fairly sick population, as you'll see, with a fairly high mortality rate in the next 30 days and the next year, because they're being, as you know, they're being identified by a transport to the ED by ambulance. And the design, which I'll spend a little bit of time during this presentation, is called instrumental variables. And we're using an instrument of the ambulance that picks the veteran up. We're going to show you that this ambulance drives whether the veteran will be sent to the VA or a non-VA ED. And we're also going to show you some evidence that this ambulance appears to be as good as randomly assigned to the veteran, as long as you condition on certain things, such as the zip code that the veteran lives in. Okay, so I'm going to start with poll question number two. Before I share the results with you, if you haven't seen this study, or maybe, I guess if you have, I'm not, you know, you're still, well, yeah, I wanted to kind of actually focus this on people that haven't seen the study. What do you think that we're going to find in just knowing that we're focusing in a certain setting that might not be generalizable to all of the VA, but do we find that the VA saves lives and saves money? Or the VA saves lives but costs more money, the VA costs lives but saves money, or the VA costs lives and costs more money, or number five, it's a mixed picture within our setting, and it depends on the station that we're looking at.
Thank you, Dr. Chen. So the poll is open and running. Let's see, the majority has submitted their answer choices. We'll just let the poll run for a couple more seconds. Again, please remember to click on submit once you've selected your choice. So things have slowed down quite a bit. I'll go ahead and close out this poll and share the results. We have 22% said A, the VA saves lives and saves money. 12% said B, the VA saves lives but costs more money. 3% said C, the VA costs lives but saves money. And then 1% said D, the VA costs lives and costs more money. And then 25% said E, it is a mixed picture depending on the station. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. All right, so as a preview of our findings that I'm going to spend the rest of the talk on, we find that the VA reduces, in our setting of emergency department care for veterans that are brought in by ambulance, we find that the VA reduces 28-day mortality by 46%. This is a striking finding. This effect arises in the first week, and it persists throughout 1 year, so it never reverses itself. It's not that the VA just delays mortality, it actually seems to prevent mortality in the first week, and this mortality does not reappear, the gap does not close over the next year. This is equivalent, if you look at other research comparing the performance of VA, non-VA hospitals using Medicare data and looking at hospitals that spend more versus spend less, we know that hospitals that spend more have a mortality benefit. They seem to do better. And this is equivalent to moving from a hospital that spends one standard deviation more in the non-VA Medicare population. We find that at least for this setting of emergency department ambulance driven care, this results for holds for all VA stations. We look at all 100 VA stations in our data, and we look at that station versus the experiment that we have in mind is like a veteran is either sent to that station or a nearby alternative non-VA, and we find that this mortality benefit holds for all VA stations, at least in our setting. And then we look at some mechanisms of what might explain this mortality benefit at the VA. And I want to highlight that the VA reduces spending by 28% or so. We have some evidence of kind of striking evidence that suggests that this might be driven by how care is contracted at the VA versus non-VA hospitals that mostly rely on fee-for-service, where the fee-for-service hospitals are charging much more and doing more expensive procedures. We find that this effect is larger for vulnerable veterans, such as those with mental health issues, as well as minorities, and those with greater VA attachment. So this suggests some mechanism that relate to focusing on care that's veteran-oriented and perhaps some continuity of care for veterans that might fall through the cracks. Finally, we look at whether IT and integrated care might be playing a role here. And here we only have suggestive evidence because we don't have a natural experiment in which the VA does not have IT or does not have integrated care. And we only look at veterans that could have been sent to the VA or non-VA hospitals. And this generally tends to be veterans with a history of VA utilization. But we do find suggestive evidence looking at the non-VA hospitals when they adopt IT or integrated care that their performance seems to improve for this population. Okay. So now going on to the rest of this talk, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the setting and background. All of us on this call, or I suspect the vast majority of us, are very familiar with the VA, but I'm going to kind of take a step back and put this in context with overall healthcare policy and the state of our healthcare delivery system in the U.S. Then I'll be talking a little bit about instrumental variables, especially this is geared for those of you who may not have been exposed to instrumental variables methods, but it is a helpful benchmark even for those of you who have seen this a couple of times. And then finally, I'll be going into the study design, main results, and spending some time on the mechanisms, the analyses that we do to look at mechanisms in this work. Okay, so this is a 10,000-foot view of the U.S. healthcare delivery system, where we actually have a mix of public and private delivery. We also have a mix of public and private financing. So just at a very high level, coming at this from, putting my hat on as a professor of health policy, we have many different healthcare systems in the U.S. It's a single country, but kind of a patchwork of healthcare systems that have public versus private financing and public versus private delivery. So what we're doing is we're focusing on this first column here of public financing, and we're looking at the first and second rows of public delivery, which the VA is part of, as well as we also have safety net hospitals in the U.S., versus private delivery that's financed publicly, such as Medicare and Medicaid. In particular, we're going to look at dually eligible veterans who are above age 65, so they're eligible for Medicare to pay for their non-VA hospital care, as well as VA care. And we're going to look at this group to kind of shed light at a high level. So even if you are not interested in the VA effect of the VA per se, which I don't think anybody on this call is, but in case you're not, this could be of general interest if you're interested in public versus private delivery, which is a perennial question, not just in the U.S., but across most developed countries. How do you deliver your healthcare through public means or private means? Now, how can we put a little bit more structure on this, and kind of thinking particularly about the VA versus non-VA hospitals? There's some big picture characteristics of a publicly delivered system, and particularly the VA, that lead to differences in what that means if you get care at the VA or a public publicly delivered healthcare system versus a private one. The first one is that there is a well-defined patient population in the VA, and in general, many public healthcare delivery systems have a well-defined patient population, versus when you look at the private system, the patient population is less well-defined. If you look at the patients at Stanford University or any other hospital, they're the patients that that show up, and they're not enrolled in the hospital as a member of that hospital. Whereas at the VA, we have veterans as our well-defined patient population, and veterans are our constituency. Now, given that we have a well-defined patient population, we also have differences in how do we contract for care. If we know our patient population, you can contract based on the population. You can contract based on services that you deliver to this population without fee for service. You can also contract based on outcomes that you have on this population. On the other hand, if you have patients that come and go, you might see them today, but might never see them tomorrow, and they go to different hospitals, and you have a payer such as Medicare, the way that this is generally contracted for is to pay for each fee for service activity. And so this basically means that we're going to contract based on whatever you record that you're doing, as opposed to anything else that you would be doing at a population level, such as adopting a health IT system or building, ways to, have better communication between veterans and the health and the providers, because those things are not so much services that you can attach a price to. And so this leads me then to the two other things that have differed between the VA and non-VA hospitals over many years. It's changed somewhat more recently with healthcare reform in the non-VA system, but to some extent, to a large extent, the differences still exist. So number one, the VA is an integrated healthcare delivery system. It's explicitly integrated. We have integration between providers in the VA in different specialties and outpatient versus inpatient care. And we have, this integration allows for providers to coordinate care for this patient population, versus a non-VA hospital, the care is mostly fragmented. If you go to one hospital, they might not be sharing records to another hospital. If you go to see a hospital, that hospital may or may not be sending records to your endocrinologist. And this is also related to health IT. We have a platform to share records. This was adopted all the way back in 1990s, as opposed to the non-VA hospitals, at least for this study period that we talk about, it was very low adoption of health IT up until the HITECH Act of 2009. So this is kind of like the state of VA versus non-VA hospital in the study period that we study up until the mid-2010s. To some extent, recent federal legislation for the private sector has acted to increase technology adoption, such as the HITECH Act or the Accountable Care Organizations and the Affordable Care Act have acted to try to increase both health IT and integrated care outside of the VA. Okay, and this is also to say this is kind of a very broad brushstroke view of VA versus non-VA care. There are some private sector organizations that can resemble the VA, such as Kaiser. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about instrumental variables. The issue, well, so let me just start with the question, how familiar are you with instrumental variables, or IV? Number one, I've used them in analysis. Number two, I've been taught them, but not really used them in analysis. I've heard of them, but have no formal training. And number three, and number four, I've never heard of them.
Thank you, Dr. Chan. So the poll is open and running. I do see that we have most of the response, and the poll is slowing down. So I'll just let that run for a couple more seconds. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and close out this poll and share the results. We have 8% said A, I've used them in analysis. 13% said B, I have been taught them but not used them in analysis. 17% said C, I've heard of them but have no formal training. And lastly, 18% said D, I've never heard of them. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Dr. Chan.
Thank you. So this is great. It's a great kind of setup for me to review instrumental variables. So now putting on my economist hat, instrumental variables, it's a way to kind of analogize your design with the randomized trial, actually. And it's a way to address the problem that people that receive a certain treatment are different than people that don't receive a treatment. So we can't just compare people that use the VA versus people that don't use the VA and look at their outcomes because there's something that's very there's fundamentally different between those people, and there's this is what we call confounding. So rather than trying to find all the sources of confounding and measure them and control for them, instrumental variables looks for something that nudges a veteran into going to the VA versus going outside of the VA. So something that nudges the subject to undertake treatment versus not, and this thing that nudges them should be as good as randomly assigned. Okay, so there's a very strong analogy to a randomized trial. You're assigned to a treatment arm versus a control arm. This assignment is kind of like the instrument, and this nudges you to take treatment more frequently than people that are assigned to the control arm. And this assignment is as good as random. So there are three components to an IV setup. The first is what we call the first stage. This is what I call the nudge. It drives treatment. By being assigned a certain instrument, you're more likely to get treatment. In our case, by being assigned a certain ambulance, you're more likely to go to the VA. The second thing is that this needs to be independent or quasi-randomly assigned to the subjects. That is, the people that are assigned an instrument, one type of instrument, should be the same as the people that are assigned another instrument value. These instruments should be randomly assigned, so the population that's assigned to the treatment arm versus the control arm, they should be in expectation the same or as good as randomly assigned. All right, so that is the veteran who is assigned an ambulance that has a high propensity to send patients to the VA is pretty much the same as the veteran that is assigned an ambulance that doesn't really send patients to the VA. And then the third one is that this assignment itself, it's called exclusion, this assignment itself shouldn't drive outcomes. This assignment itself is just a means to increase your probability of treatment. And this is a little more difficult to test. And if you are interested, the paper details ways in which we kind of assess this concern. But the assumption we would need is that ambulances that send veterans to the VA don't really do anything systematically different to affect things like spending or mortality. Now, you might be concerned because you can think of other things that ambulances do. They drive. Not only drive patients to places, they also perform medical procedures. They also might be doing things that could influence what the hospital does, other than just sending the patient to the hospital. So we are going to look at things like that in the paper. I don't really have time to discuss it in this presentation, but roughly speaking, we can see what the ambulance does in the data that we have. And we could also look at certain patients that we don't think are going to be nudged, in this first stage. And for those patients, we would expect there to be no effect of the ambulance, which ambulance company they get. And we find evidence to support that. In other words, patients that are very unlikely to ever go to the VA, when they get an ambulance that sends patients to the VA versus sends patients to other places, that doesn't really affect their outcomes. Importantly, just like in a randomized trial, not everybody has to comply with this experiment. There are people that would go to the VA regardless of the ambulance that picks them up, and there are people that would go to a non-VA hospital regardless of which ambulance picks them up. And we allow for that. That's fine in an IV setup. It's just that the IV is able to estimate the causal effect for people that are nudged, and it really doesn't say much about people that are not nudged in this quasi experiment. In other words, it takes the intent to treat, which is just comparing people who are assigned to an ambulance, a high propensity ambulance versus a low propensity ambulance, and it scales it up by the share of veterans that comply with this experiment. This is just something that I borrowed from the source that I quote below. which just is a schematic of how an IV works. So usually we're going to be comparing, we're interested in this exposure or this treatment. And we can't just look at this exposure, this impact of this exposure on an outcome, because there might be some confounders that impact whether you get the exposure and also impact whether you get an outcome. All right. So in other words, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a step back and look for an instrument that through relevance or through this first stage impacts this exposure, but does not impact the outcome. So if you look at something, if you look for something like that, that is both impacts the outcome, does not impact the, sorry, impacts the exposure or treatment, but does not impact the outcome, and also is as good as randomly assigned. So number three, this instrument is as good as randomly assigned to veterans, then we have this setup that I just described, this IV setup. This is, we are not the first people to use this IV using ambulance propensities. There was an earlier paper in 2015 that demonstrated this kind of basic design of using the ambulance that is as good as randomly assigned to a given patient and using that propensity of that ambulance to send that patient to various hospitals. And New York City was one example in this paper where you have some ambulances that are actually owned by private hospitals. And the ambulance company that is actually just the fire department. If you're picked up by a fire department ambulance, you have a 61% chance of going to the public hospital. Versus if you're picked up by an ambulance that's owned by a hospital, then of course you have a much higher chance, a 75% chance of going to a private hospital in New York City. So we're going to use a similar concept, but apply to whether you go to a VA or a non-VA hospital. All right, so just talking a little bit more about this design. We rely on this idea that ambulance companies have different propensities to send veterans to the VA. Now, this can occur through a number of different mechanisms. So it might be that ambulance companies might be affiliated with certain hospitals. If you have an ambulance company that's owned by a private hospital, then that ambulance company is going to be more likely to send patients to that hospital. Ambulance companies might also have different degrees to which they can ascertain whether a patient is a veteran. So if you never ask whether a patient is a veteran, then you're much less likely to send a patient to the VA than if you do. And finally, ambulances might have a base of operation that's closer to the VA versus a non-VA hospital. And we can see this in the records when we actually see where the company is located. And we use the company's location as the instrument as opposed to the ambulance identity. We find some similar, though less statistically significant results, suggesting that where the ambulance base of operation is may drive some of these propensities to send a veteran to the VA versus a non-VA hospital. The second thing is we need that the ambulance needs to be randomly assigned, conditional on certain things. The main thing that we condition on is which zip code the veteran is at. So for a given zip code, we need there to be at least two different ambulance companies to pick that veteran up. And conditional on that zip code, there is no systematic difference between veterans that are assigned to one ambulance company versus another, such as when you call 911. And then finally, we need that the amb exclusion or the ambulance cannot directly affect patient health. All right. So now launching into the study design and the main results, we focus on veterans above age 65. We use this ambulance instrument that I just described, and we include a number of baseline controls. The main one, again, is zip code and where you are calling from. We see a number of different indicators in the ambulance claims that say whether you are picked up by, picked up at a residential facility or whether you're picked up at a scene of an accident or whether you're picked up at home. And also the ambulance type in the ambulance claims, we see whether the ambulance is an ALS or a BLS ambulance. This is in our baseline control, but it's not as important as zip code. Finally, we look at the time categories that you're picked up. What day of the week is it? What month and year is it that you're picked up by this ambulance? And we look at whether you have used the VA in the past. It turns out that we require some amount of prior utilization of the VA because if you've never used the VA in the past, almost none of those veterans are ever sent to the VA. So those veterans are not compliers and are therefore not really useful in our quasi experiment. So I'll talk a little bit more about the sample construction, which builds on that. The data that we use are VA administrative records from VINCI and Medicare claims. So Medicare happens to pay for all of the ambulance rides that we see in the data. We see a Medicare claim. We see ED visits in both the VA and non-VA data from this period of time, from 2000 to 2014. We see a number of veteran characteristics in both the Medicare and the VA records prior to the ED visit. And we also see a number of utilization outcomes after the ED visit, which we use to impute the spending that goes on after random, quasi-random assignment to a VA hospital versus a non-VA hospital. The main health outcome that we focus on is mortality, which are quite reliable in the VA data because they're pulled from a number of different sources, such as Medicare, the VHA, the Health Administration, Veterans Benefit Administration, as well as Social Security Administration. And then there is a part of our paper where we also look at characteristics of the VA and non-VA hospitals to see what mechanisms drive the effect. We draw this from the American Hospital Association and other government sources, such as healthit.gov, to ask whether a hospital has adopted health IT or not. These are all non-VA hospitals that we look at. Okay, for the study sample, we focus on dually eligible veterans who are brought in by ambulance. This is a sample of 9.4 million ED visits for 3 million veterans. We have a number of restrictions, which I think are fairly sensible given that I've described the design. So first of all, we need zip codes that are close to both a VA and a non-VA alternative. We also need a zip code with at least two ambulance companies, because if a zip code is only served by one ambulance company, then we don't have this design that I talked about where your good is randomly assigned to an ambulance company conditional on your zip code. Finally, we focus on veterans that have some VA utilization in the past year, because these are where we have compliers. And fourth, we look at veterans with no ride in the prior month because we want to focus on an index ride where we can look at outcomes a month later. So this is a fairly sick patient population. If you're elderly and you're picked up by an ambulance, you have a 10 percentage point 28-day mortality rate. As I'll show later, if you look out to a year, about a third of the veterans that we see in the sample will be dead, unfortunately. Also, now, harking back to previous literature, this appears to be veterans with conditions that just occur randomly because we look at the weekend share, of the rides that we see in our sample, how many of these rides happen on a weekday versus a weekend, and two-sevenths of the rides happen on a weekend, which suggests that these are the patients that are picked up by ambulance are not. They're very different than patients that are planning their medical visits, and these are conditions that happen that are severe, and they are not planned conditions. So this is just a table showing the study sample as we implement the different restrictions on the sample, going from the left here all the way to the right here. So we start with dually eligibles, a sample of 8.8 million rides, and we go down to a final sample of 400,000 rides when we've kind of implemented all of our study restrictions. You could see that despite a large number of rides being thrown out because we're implementing these restrictions, many of these characteristics stay fairly constant or stable. So the share of patients who are male, the average age, the weekend rate is rock solid stable at 2/7, and the 28-day mortality out looks fairly stable at 10 percentage points. What we do change when we kind of go from the left hand to the right hand is we're intentionally increasing the number of patients that use the VA. So we go from 4% on the far left to something closer to 33% on the far right. We also, as expected, see that they've used the VA ED in the past more likely when you go to the far right, and they're less likely to use a Medicare, a non-VAED as you go to the far right. And finally, because we're focusing on zip codes where there's more than one hospital available, more than one ambulance companies that serve this zip code, we tend to be focusing more on urban populations, and this is where we have an increasing number, a share of Black patients as we go from the far left to the far right. Okay. All right. So this is what I talked about it as being the first stage. We need an instrument that affects your probability of using the VA. And the way that we construct this in ambulance is we use the identity of the ambulance company, and we ask for the other patients that this ambulance company takes, for the other dually eligible veterans, what share of those patients are sent to the VA. We see that this is highly predictive of where the index patient goes. So in other words, we just have enough data at the ambulance company level where we can form a fairly strong prediction of whether this ambulance company is going to take you to the VA versus a non-VA hospital. And this prediction is just based on this leave-out share is fairly linear, and it kind of ranges from 25% of our patient population being sent to the VA when they have the lowest propensity ambulance company to 40% or 42% if they have the highest propensity ambulance company. So this is kind of looking at 1,000 different ambulance companies, dividing these ambulance companies into bins, 20 bins. If you're in an ambulance, if you're taken by an ambulance company in the lowest bin, you have a 25% chance of being taken to the VA. If you're taken by an ambulance company in the highest bin, you have a 42% chance of being taken to the VA. So therefore we have a complier share of 42 minus 25%, which is about 17% of our sample are nudged to the VA or not based on the ambulance company that takes them. This is not all of the sample, it's not even most of the sample, but it's a fairly sizable portion of the sample. 17% of the veterans in our sample are as good as randomly assigned to a VA versus a non-VA hospital based on the ambulance that picks them up. Okay, now we take this instrument and we start looking at outcomes, as well as we start looking at patient characteristics for two different reasons. So we look at patient characteristics. In other words, what we're doing is we're looking at all the patient characteristics and predicting how likely they're going to die in the next 28 days. And we ask whether that is correlated with the instrument. We're doing this to assess the assumption of independence. We want the ambulance to be as good as randomly assigned, which means when we control for our baseline controls, such as zip code and ambulance source, we don't want any systematic relationship between veterans who are sicker and veterans who are more likely to receive one type of instrument versus another. And this is shown in the red dots here, where it's a very flat line. There doesn't appear to be any systematic correlation between your predicted mortality and the ambulance that picks you up. On the other hand, when we look at your actual mortality, what actually happens in the next 28 days, we find that ambulances that are more likely to send you to the VA on this right side have a lower mortality than ambulances that are less likely to send you to the VA. So this is our quasi-experiment. We compare ambulances. We don't compare veterans that use the VA versus not. We compare veterans that are assigned to ambulances that have a high versus low propensity to send to the VA, and we look at those outcomes, and we find that there is a lower mortality among veterans that are quasi-randomly assigned an ambulance that is more likely to send you to the VA, okay? All right, so we can take this, I just plotted 28 days, but we can show you the effect over various weeks after the ambulance rides. And what I'm doing here is I'm not showing you the effect, but I'm showing you the potential outcomes. I'm showing you the outcomes in the arm that was assigned to the VA as good as randomly versus the arm that is not assigned to the VA as good as randomly using the ambulance design. So these you could think of as Kaplan-Meier survival curves, and we're tracing out mortality. We're actually tracing out survival over the next year in weekly increments. What happens to veterans that are quasi-randomly sent to the VA versus those that are not? And we find that there is a gap between these two groups of veterans that emerges in the first week. And this gap, again, is this, by the time you're at 28 days, this gap represents a 46% reduction in the overall mortality. And of course, as you go on, in time, this gap is relatively smaller relative to the whole, reduction the whole mortality, which is much higher at 1 year than it is at 28 days. But in terms of absolute terms, this gap remains fairly constant, over this first year, which means that the lives that we're saving in that first week, we're not losing them later on in the year. These lives are, in other words, we're not just delaying mortality. It appears that by being sent to the VA, we're actually preventing mortality all the way up until, 1 year later. Other key outcomes, we look at whether the veteran's likely to be admitted. The VA is actually less likely to admit veterans. The VA has more outpatient visits, so it's likely that you're more likely to have some outpatient follow-up care after your ED visit by a substantial amount, by 0.4 0.4 more visits based on a mean of 1.4. And there doesn't appear to be a significant effect on ED revisits. Okay, so now what happens when we look at spending? So we look at all of the care, all of the utilization that you get after your ambulance ride. This includes both inpatient utilization and outpatient utilization. And just like I showed you what happened in the next year and the following year for mortality, what I'm showing you here is what happens in the following year for spending. And we see that the spending is higher for non-VA and lower for VA. That there's kind of this doesn't all occur in the first week. It grows over the first month and maybe even the first 2 months, and then it stays about constant. The gap stays constant between VA, those that were randomly assigned to the VA versus those who were randomly assigned to a non-VA. This effect is about a 20% reduction in spending based on the 28-day mean. And we do some analyses in our work to ask whether the spending is a result of lower prices at the VA or less, or just doing and reporting fewer things. It appears to be the second. When we kind of fix the prices to be the same at the VA versus non-VA hospital, this gap in spending is about twice as large. So in other words, there's a 40% reduction when we fix prices, and it's a 20% reduction when we allow for prices to be different between the VA and non-VA hospitals. Okay, now going a little bit more into the mechanisms in the remainder of my time, I have about 10 to 15 minutes. We look at reported utilization, which I find the most striking between these two systems. We look at whether these effects are, differ or heterogeneous by any hospital or patient characteristics. We look at who are the compliers. So I talked about the compliers earlier on. There are methods to characterize who are the compliers. What characteristics do they have? Are they more or less disadvantaged? Do they have more or fewer health conditions? And then finally, if we have time, we can talk a little bit about the suggestive evidence that IT and integrated care might matter. Okay, so reported utilization, I think this is quite striking. What we've done here is we've looked at the top 25 codes for procedures that we see in the data, just based in terms of volume. And these top 25 codes here, among these codes, we look at what is the share of these codes done at the VA. So you have codes here that very few of these codes are done at the VA, like less than 10%, around 5% are done at the VA, versus these codes here, more than 90% of these codes are done at the VA. So there's quite a large amount of variation in the types of procedures that are reported and done in the VA versus a non-VA healthcare system. And here, if you just kind of look at these codes, some of the more intensive stuff is being done outside of the VA. Also, these are very specific codes. This one happens to be whether you spend more than 30 minutes talking to your patient on the discharge day. There's another code, which is 99238, which is you spent less than 30 minutes. And you could see why, if you're at the VA, it doesn't really matter whether you're going to code up how long you spent talking to your patients. But outside of the VA, because it's fee for service, this determines how much the hospital is paid for when you record that you spent more than 30 minutes talking to your patient on the discharge day. So you have codes like this. A lot of these things are you just get paid a lot more for reporting these things versus things like this when you have like a telephone call that's 5 to 10 minutes in Medicare, you'll get paid $5 or $10 to make that call. So none of the non-VA hospitals are ever recording this call. But we see this recorded quite a bit at the VA because we do track when we call our veterans, and perhaps we do call their veterans more often at the VA because it's an integrated healthcare system. Okay. This is another way of looking at it. When you look at the same thing that I plotted before, where these are codes that are very often not performed in the VA versus these are codes very often performed only in the VA, the codes that are performed only in the VA have a lower reimbursement rate, which is whereas the ones that are performed much more often outside of the VA have a much higher reimbursement rate, perhaps 10 times, 5 to 10 times as much when you kind of look out here. Okay. This is another way of kind of looking at it. There are ways for a given thing that you do. So even if you have the same procedure, which is an office visit, there are different levels of coding where you could say that I spent a lot of time. I need to be reimbursed much more for this code. I did a very comprehensive history, did a very comprehensive exam. So therefore, I'm a level five and I should get $145 versus it's a very basic visit. I get $30 here. So there's different kind of levels that you can bill evaluation and management codes. And what we see is when we compare the VA versus non-VA billing, or no, there's not really billing, but the reporting of services that are performed, the overall odds that you get the highest level code versus the lowest level code is only the same at the VA versus non-VA hospitals in critical care. There we see that VA and non-VA hospitals are equally likely to say that they did the highest level of service versus the lowest level of service, where certain things like consultation is up to 15% higher odds that you're going to be billed the highest level service outside of the VA versus in the VA. And there's really nothing else that is even below one. All of these have odds ratios that are above one, sometimes significantly so. All right. Next is we look at heterogeneity by hospitals and patient characteristics. First, we find that the VA advantage in terms of the survival benefit holds across all locations. We don't find very many consistent patterns for hospital characteristics that predict better performance of a VA versus a non-VA hospital, but we do find some intuitive heterogeneity for patient characteristics. We find that the VA advantage is larger for minority patients, it's larger for patients with mental health and substance issues, and it's larger for veterans that use the VA in prior periods. These are the same veterans that the VA will have more information on because it's an integrated healthcare system. And if that veteran happens to then go to a non-VA hospital, that non-VA hospital won't have that same level of information. We look at the complier characteristics. How do you characterize the patients that are more likely to be swayed by this ambulance? And we find that the compliers have more prior VA visits and they're more disadvantaged. They have more, they're minorities, they have lower income, they have mental illness and substance abuse issues. And notably, these are also veterans where the VA has made substantial investments to treat these particular conditions. We find that the compliers have larger treatment effects. So even though in my introduction to the IV methods, I said that in IV, we're able to estimate the effects for compliers. There are some methods within IVs that in within IV that we can say, how do these treatment effects vary depending on how much of a complier you are? So you can characterize compliers based on the intensity at which you're a complier, like how eager of you're a complier versus how are you the first person to be sent to the VA versus kind of the last person to be sent to the VA? And we can kind of show that the treatment effects are larger for people that are more likely to comply and use the VA. Okay, so finally, in my last few minutes, I'm going to talk about the role that health IT and integrated care plays. We hear a lot about the importance of that. We certainly spend a lot of time thinking about how to integrate care, how to use health IT. There's a lot of operational and research important on this, and there's a lot of qualitative literature talking about the role of IT and integrated care on, what makes the VA perform better, at least on process measures. And there's been legislation to improve health IT in integration. In the non-VA setting, there's this idea that we think that this should benefit patients. Now, We think this is likely to play a role, but we can't really directly study this in the setting of our data and time period and quasi-experiment. And this is because we have data when the VA has already adopted Health IT. The VA adopted Health IT at a very early stage. And there was no switching from adoption into adoption in the VA hospitals within our time period. Also, we can't really study how veterans that have no VA attachment at all. So when we're kind of interested in integrated care, we can't. There, none of our compliers are veterans that have never used the VA. It just turns out to be that case, and it makes sense. Although we find that the effect of the VA is bigger for veterans that have more attachment than others. Okay, so these are the ways in which we're limited in which we can in how we can study the effect of Health IT on the VA and integrated care on the VA. But what we do is we look at patients who never use the VA, and these are patients never who are never going to be sent to the VA in a quasi-experiment. And we look at what non-VA hospital do they tend to use in the pre-period. And we ask whether that non-VA hospital has adopted Health IT or integrated care based on healthit.gov or whether it's adopted an ACO. And we kind of ask whether that hospital does better for that veteran who never uses the VA, after that hospital has adopted IT or integrated care. We find only some suggestive evidence to that effect. So we use the natural experiment of the High Tech Act, which really spurred Health IT adoption, around 2009. And we kind of see whether these veterans have any benefit being sent to the hospital that they usually go to. And it's usually around zero before the hospital has adopted Health IT. But it does go to some level, to about 0.03. It's still not as big as the VA effect, but it does seem to emerge after 2009 when hospitals were really spurred to adopt Health IT. And we see data in healthit.gov where there's quite a large increase in Health IT adoption around that time. So this is suggestive evidence that Health IT does matter. Integration of care could matter. Even outside of the VA system, where of course you have other contracting issues, but at least it still could make a difference for people that don't use the VA system. Okay, so I'm gonna wrap up and conclude that the VA is higher productivity. The definition of productivity that I use here is that it saves money and saves lives. It reduces mortality by 48% at lower cost. And the mechanisms are several, because when we compare the VA to a non-VA hospital, it's really a bundle of things that sets the VA apart. Number one is like this orientation towards population health rather than fee for service. We see this really strikingly in the services that are reported. The contracting is very different between the VA and non-VA hospitals. Number two, we see that the VA has larger effects for a certain patient population that uses the VA more often and has issues that are the VA has paid attention to, like mental health and substance abuse. And we find some suggestive impact of IT adoption and integrated care in non-VA hospitals. So, I think everybody on this call is interested in this because we're all interested in the VA. But this is, I would say, is relevant even more broadly for understanding what drives productivity in healthcare systems within the US and beyond. So I will stop there and open up for any questions.
All right. For those of you on the call, if you have any questions, feel free to enter them in the Q&A. There are no questions right now, David, but I have a couple, if you don't mind entertaining those, particularly when it comes to the non-VA sector. It sounds like adoption of IT could be explaining some of these effects, right? I mean, part might be because of the it's probably getting to some sharing of information that's analogous to an integrated healthcare system. Any comments about Kaiser and because you said that they are sort of similar to the VA. Any idea or any evidence to show that Kaiser has similar effects? like the VA?
Yeah, very good question. We can't really see Kaiser very much in our records because we focus on Medicare fee-for-service. But it's a good question, and we've kind of also looked at hospital characteristics, whether they're officially in like an HMO or not. We don't find much heterogeneity that this drives any differences in effects relative to the VA. I would think if some of these mechanisms are at play, then you should see these mechanisms hold, outside of public delivery. If you've got like a known patient population, if you've got health IT, integration of care, that you should see some of these things appear in a place like Kaiser. I am unaware of research that has shown that, unfortunately. And I guess one big difference between the VA and Kaiser is it's much easier to do this type of research in the VA than it is at Kaiser. Kaiser does have a research operation, but my experience has been that it's more difficult to study the operation itself of Kaiser as opposed to certain patient populations and diseases at Kaiser.
Thank
I would
you.
love to do that
We
though.
do
If
have a
there's anybody
question.
in Kaiser from Kaiser on the call, I would love to do that.
I think everyone would love to get Kaiser data to do some health policy research. We do have a question. This is from Bernie Black. Your IV regression coefficient is driven by the lowest and highest VA proportion areas. If I look in the middle, where the vast majority of the hospitals are, I don't see much. And the estimate would likely be insignificant. Not so much a question, but more like a comment. Do you have anything to respond to that?
Well, we don't have, even though we have a sample of 400,000 patients, like as you know, that the compliers are a share of that. And if this is, I think, one helpful way of kind of looking at it, if you look at, I think what Bernie might be talking is if you look at this versus this, there might be some curvature to that, but like there is, a cloud of points here that this entire result is fitted on. Like we don't have that much power to kind of say what part, what is the effect mostly, what part of this distribution is the effect mostly driven by? Is it like ambulances in the middle versus ambulances at the beginning versus the end? In our paper, so Bernie is clearly kind of knows these methods. If you look in our paper, there is a section that looks at marginal treatment effects, which tries to kind of say, is there any heterogeneity in the treatment effect along this spectrum? And again, we find that there is kind of maybe some more bigger treatment effects here, but it's not really kind of, we can't really, it's not a striking heterogeneity in treatment effects that we find when you kind of look at this in that part of the, with that analysis.
Thank you. Let's see. I don't see any other question. I do have a policy-related question for you, David. With your results seem to suggest that the implementation or the expansion of community care for veterans, particularly the 65-year-old population or greater, may not be all that what our intentions originally were, or what the policymakers originally intended. Right? It was more to increase access, hopefully improve care to these veterans. And yet, the VA is sort of double downing on this. They're increasing the amount of funds available for community care. I mean, based on your results, is this a wise or prudent choice by government agencies to continue with this program, or should there be some adjustments or amendments to the program to improve its efficiency?
No, it's a very good question. I'm concerned based on these results and based on our prior knowledge that the VA actually delivers, performance like the process measures that we see in the VA usually outstrip the process measures that we see outside. I'm also concerned about the contracting where the incentives are not fully aligned to take good care of veterans outside of the VA. I would say that though these results are specific to the emergency department setting. But that said, I think some of these things that we talk about contracting at the VA versus outside of the VA are quite general. I think it's quite important that we continue to study this and use this, if we're going to shift care outside of the VA, see what happens to the spending and the outcomes, the health outcomes for veterans that are then shifted outside of the VA.
Thank you, David. We are at the top of the hour. Whitney, I'm not sure how we should close, but I don't know if David shared his contact information, but if you wanted to ask David any questions, you could always feel free to contact either myself or Whitney or even David directly, and we'll make sure your comments or questions are addressed.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, I believe my contact should be on the PERC website, should be on my Stanford website as well. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you,
No,
David,
thank you,
for a
David.
wonderful HSR cyber seminar and for taking the time to prepare and present for today. Please go ahead and, for the audience, thank you for also attending, and please go ahead and submit the survey. We really do and appreciate your feedback. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.